more problems with Boeing 737 MAX. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. There's a new problem with Boeing's troubled 737 MAX plane. This is the aircraft that was involved in those two fatal crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia. Boeing says it's working on software to fix the problem. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live from Washington. Nancy, what's the latest problem?
Sabri, in its official statement on this, the Federal Aviation Administration will only say that it recently found a potential risk with the 737 MAX. It's been widely reported this morning that this is another problem with the flight control system on the 737 MAX that pushes the nose of the plane down automatically to keep it from stalling. There's apparently a problem with software that's designed to counteract that system if it's malfunctioning, which is apparently what happened in the Ethiopia and Indonesia crashes.
So what's Boeing have to say about this?
Well, Boeing says this new problem would not be solved by the software fix it's already developing, so Boeing will need to keep working on the software before the planes can fly again. In the meantime, all 737 MAX planes are still grounded, and now United Airlines says it'll keep the planes off of its flying schedule until after Labor Day. Boeing is now selling very few of these planes with no new orders in May.
What's the broader impact here?
There is a broader impact. The Commerce Department reported yesterday new orders for durable goods fell for the second straight month in May. Durable goods, of course, are things made to last for 3 years or more. Orders for durables fell by about 1% last month, with orders for transportation equipment falling more than 4%. If you strip out aircraft, there is an increase in demand for some machinery and computers, so Boeing's troubles are weighing down this part of the overall economy.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you. Boeing stock is down 5% in pre-market trading, by the way. And with that, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.4%. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.2% range. The Dow future is down 57 points. That's 0.2%. And the 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.04%. The first Democratic presidential debate of the election season got underway last night in Miami. Part two is tonight, and it's being co-hosted by NBC News, MSNBC, and the Spanish-language network Telemundo. This marks the first time in history that a Spanish-language network is co-hosting a Democratic primary debate. As Marketplace's Renata Sago reports, it's a sign of Latino voters' importance to the candidates.
Telemundo will again co-host tonight's debate and broadcast it in Spanish. Political analyst Frank Torres says this gives Spanish-speaking Latino voters a chance to see if Democratic candidates understand the community's top priorities right now, pay and the economy.
Whether you're talking to a Mexican in California or a Puerto Rican in New York, they're looking for opportunities for higher waging in existing jobs.
In a poll out this week, the Latino civil rights group Unidos U.S. estimated Latinos will make up the largest minority voting bloc this election. Arturo Vargas, who runs an advocacy group called Naleo, says still candidates are missing key opportunities to connect with Latinos.
Many times we do not have targeted campaigns in English. And people would say, well, we'll just reach them through the general campaign. That is always a colossal mistake.
The Pew Research Center found nearly 12 million Latinos voted in 2018. That's compared to the estimated 29 million Latinos who are eligible to vote. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
Part of being a responsible news organization, especially one that covers business and the economy, is fiscal responsibility. Marketplace's budget year ends on June 30th, and we're closing in on our goal of 2,500 donors for this drive. But we still need to hear from you. Become a Marketplace investor for as little as $5 and keep trustworthy, independent news going strong. Contribute today at marketplace.org, and thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
President Trump has arrived in Osaka, Japan for the G20 summit, and he has bones to pick with a number of leaders there. He's expected to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping to talk trade. And according to the South China Morning Post newspaper, the two sides have agreed to a temporary truce to allow trade talks to resume. As our China correspondent Jennifer Peck explains from Shanghai, this is not the first time this has happened.
At the last G20 meeting in Argentina, President Trump and Chinese President Xi dined on steaks and caramel pancakes, and they agreed to put a pause on any new tariffs. Rounds of trade talks followed, making a deal look possible, says Xiong Peng, with the Beijing think tank Pangol Institution.
There were constant leaks to the media on what the sticking points in the trade talks were, including tariffs, China's blocked internet, and enforcing intellectual property protection. And they were making progress step by step.
But then, in early May, Trump sent out a pair of tweets threatening to raise tariffs again. The markets trembled. Chinese leaders had miscalculated, says Xiong Peng. They overestimated the strength of China's economy and underestimated the strength of the U.S.'s. Plus,
they thought Trump was anxious to reach an agreement, so China pulled back on some promises, thinking Trump would agree.
Instead, he went ahead and raised tariffs from 10 to 25% on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods and threatened there could be even more to come. The U.S. also blacklisted Huawei and other Chinese supercomputing firms from buying American parts. China retaliated. It announced its own list of, quote, unreliable entities and has also gone after FedEx and Ford. But it will be impossible for the economic superpowers to sever ties, says Jing Ulrich with JP Morgan Chase. She spoke at a global conference in Shanghai yesterday.
The two countries are very much reliant on each other, like a married couple.
She anticipates cooler heads will prevail this time around. The two leaders could reach an agreement when they meet, says analyst Xiong Peng.
But reaching an agreement, strictly speaking, would only mean things will not get worse in the short term.
He expects the confrontation between the U.S. and China to last for a long time. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Here's an unsettling statistic. In 2017, more than 350 people were intentionally shot dead at work. That comes out to more than one for each workday of the year. That number is the starting point for a new Marketplace original series on gun violence in the workplace. We've got details on how you can prepare for such an incident and other stories. Go to marketplace.org. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.